Chef Sean Corrigan, director of Cantillon Consulting. First of all, Sean, how are you, Sean? I haven't seen you for a while. Are you well, my friend?
Yes, we're all right. Still surviving, Steve. You too looking good, I see.
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing what the facial surgery can do. Sean, look, let's get back into business. You're looking for value, and you make the very important point that, here we go. US growth is hope of jam tomorrow, as opposed to value, which is empty jam jars today. But even value doesn't look cheap at the moment, according to you, Sean.
Well, again, it depends how you compare it around, but value is still highly priced against certainly the rest of the world stocks. Now, that's partly a sort of a circular horse and cart. The strong dollar makes U.S. stocks look better, but the strong U.S. stocks keep the dollar bid. So there's an interrelation there. But yes, definitely, growth is the thing everybody's talking about being extremely expensive, and it's at 2-3 standard deviations above its normal ranges compared with value, but it's also very high compared with value itself is very high compared with the rest of the world, compared with commodities and so on and so forth. So even there's not a great deal of foundation on historical trends.
Yeah, let's go there on commodities, because I know that the commodity index of commodity stocks in the US is still down, I think, 36% from its 52-week high as well. Oil prices remain under pressure. Nat gas, again, I was looking at that yesterday, extraordinary how it just can't catch a bid at the moment as well. Are commodities going to have a revaluation, or are they correctly priced, in your view, Sean?
Well, we could possibly say they're correctly priced for where we are now, because, as we've seen, there's no shortage of bad news relating to this coronavirus, and there's no shortage of... There's a one-way incentive for governments. The one-way incentive is to be overcautious, but because we've been drummed in with this headline about cases, when, of course, in fact, there are many false positives, there's extra testing being done, there's all sorts of arguments around whether that's the number we should look at, but we're looking at it. So in the world where we're always worried about the next lockdown, where we're still very discoordinated in global supply chains, where China tried to get started, for instance, and then found that the rest of us had locked down, so we didn't have any foreign markets, and so on and so forth, commodities clearly are not seeing the bid they had before. But if we get the pickup that the growth stocks are telling us, and all the optimists in the general stock market are telling us are going to happen, then somewhere along the line, we're going to start building, we're going to start burning, and we're going to start eating.
Yeah, but are we going to see, potentially, if the speculators, the financial investors, get ahead of themselves and ahead of that growth that we're talking about there, could we see more violence like we saw in the April expiry in the WTI, Sean?
Well, one would hope that's not going to be the case again. Calmer heads do seem to have prevailed across most of these markets. I mean, the one that you alluded to there is Natgas. And ironically, Natgas is kind of a victim of the oil success, because a lot of the pickup in the United States production of Natgas, which is starting to fill the inventories, is because people are drilling again. And of course, the gas comes off as a byproduct. So in its own right, that itself is not necessarily the worst signal for the larger picture rather than Natgas as a specific market.
What about, why don't we round off commodities and finish off with gold as well? Gold bugs should not be indifferent at this time as well. Where's gold going, Sean?
Well, clearly the charts still look bullish. Everybody loves the story. But the point is gold is being bought here because we're worried about inflation, supposedly. But you can't have inflation without the prices of the other commodities going up. And gold has gone a very long way up in relative terms again. All these discussions we're having here about relative value. Gold is partly here because of the extreme low yields, the suppression that the central banks are doing. So there's a two-way trade. There's the fear of future inflation, but there's also the fact that the opportunity cost is done, and there's a very close relation between treasury yields related to their trend and gold against the rest of commodities. But in the long run, if you believe the market will recover, the other commodities must start to catch up gold somehow, and some of that safe haven shine must come back off gold. So I wouldn't be bearish on it outright, because the charts look that way, people want to buy it. But ultimately, somewhere, the other ones have to start picking up with it.
Sean, you mentioned about the overcaution of authorities, government, central banks as well. The vast amount of money, I keep hearing $6 trillion being thrown at this as well. The money supply picked up enormously, over 20% in the US this year, big increases elsewhere. Why is this never going to create inflation? I mean, let alone hyperinflation. What about just a good old inflation? You and I and Jeff and Karen have talked previously about the spurious 2% level. We're not getting anywhere near, are we?
Well, don't forget, at the moment, this is what I call the Ben Gunn syndrome. If you remember your childhood book, Treasure Island, old Ben was locked away on the island for 4 or 5 years, sitting on a great treasure chest, but he couldn't do anything with it. He had to wait till the guys came and picked him up and brought him back to Britain. After that, he was bankrupt with and broke within a few weeks because he spent it all. So the question is, what happens when we get out? The central banks have created an awful lot of extra money. Some of it has been stockpiled. Corporates, for instance, have borrowed enormously in these very favorable conditions, but they've also piled up enormous deposits. So when we get out, do they pay the deposits down, use the deposits to pay that war chest of debt off, or do they start to spend? And similarly with us householders coming out of lockdown, if we are allowed a job again, do we go back to spending? Does that cut the debt down? Governments everywhere are not going to try to allow this to happen. They're going to really fight against this. They're all on fiscal inflation. They're all on Keynesianism. Half of them are on MMT. So the battle is going to be supply-demand. Are we paying off war chests? Are we using the thing? I think supply-side disruptions are a big issue here, that you can't just switch the economy on and off when the government says, okay, go, drop the flag, off you go, lads. I think we'll see more disruptions potentially on that side than the other. And if we still have a surplus of money, prices will rise.
Yeah, Sean, brilliant as ever. They don't like a saving, do they? I don't know why. I quite like saving personally, but maybe that's just in my nature. Sean, lovely to see you, and lovely to see such a well-stocked bookshelf behind. I don't think I've seen a bigger bookshelf than that anywhere in the last 3 months.
You haven't seen half it, Steve. Thank you very much.
Good to see you, my friend. I look forward to seeing you in the flesh. Sean Corrigan, Director of Pantheon Consulting.